It's time for Rose Chat on Blog Talk Radio. We're the only show on the airwaves dedicated to growing roses. We're glad you've joined us today. Our phone lines are open, and we'd love to hear from you during today's show. The number to call is 347-677-1870. Or send us a tweet using the Rose Chat hashtag on Twitter. Join us as we explore the world of roses.
Underwriting support for Rose Chat Radio is provided by Haven Brand Soil Conditioners, providing generations of gardeners with a truly all-natural alternative to chemical fertilizers with their line of composted manure teas and alfalfa teas for roses, available retail and wholesale online at manuretea.com.
Well, hello, and thank you for joining us for Rose Chat on Blog Talk Radio. We've got a wonderful show today. First up, Teresa Byington's going to be chatting with Guinevere Wiley of Roses of Yesterday and Today on their unique collection of beautiful old garden roses. And a little bit later in the show, I'll be chatting with Jacques Ferrar, Vice President of Licensing and New Business Development for Star Roses and Plants. He'll be here to talk about the Plant Watch program. It's a discussion you don't want to miss, so stay tuned. Good morning, Teresa.
Good morning, Chris. Beautiful day here in my garden, but I don't think our friends in the Northeast are getting off so easy today.
I know. It's like time to put down their snow shovel and come in and listen to Rose Chat, right?
Yes, it sure is. It sure is, because we have a wonderful show lined up today. Our first guest is Guinevere Wiley from Roses of Yesterday and Today, and she's going to share with us about their very interesting collection of old garden roses. Good morning, Guinevere, and welcome to Rose Chat.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me today.
Oh, we're so glad you're here. Guinevere, your company was started by Francis Lester, an Englishman who, among other things, put together one of the first rose catalogs that set the standard for all rose catalogs to come. Could you share with us some of that rich company history?
Sure, I'd love to. Yes, Francis E. Lester, he was an orange shipper from Riverside, and he moved up to Monterey Bay, where he was the president of the Chamber of Commerce, and he discovered this little canyon where we live. It's in a little town called Corralitos, and he ended up settling here and started collecting roses, many roses he'd seen from his travels around California and seen the roses at various missions, and he recognized them from home where he grew up in England. And he grew up during the heyday of the rose hybridization period. And so he recognized so many of the roses, and he started collecting them right here, just a half mile up the road from where we are now.
That's awesome. You know, I still have my catalogs from your company that are 20 years old, and I use them all the time. The descriptions are so beautiful. But also, your catalogs have personal comments, and that means so much to the home gardener. I love this quote from Francis Lester that says, "This catalog is not for the expert horticulturist, but for the amateur gardener whom we serve faithfully and whose interests we hold to be paramount." So that's a good, strong base for information, and I love that. One of the reasons old roses are so highly valued is their fragrance. And when we think of the true rose fragrance, we are most often thinking of the damask roses. Could you share the history of damask roses with us and make some recommendations on the best ones to grow?
Yes. Well, the damask roses are traditionally used for their attar of rose, and they distill the damask roses to make the rose oil that they use in perfumes. Mostly they've been grown in Bulgaria, is a big, you know, the center of rose perfume. And so we carry several of the damask roses. Many of them are once annual bloomers, but one benefit of the once annual bloomers is that when they bloom, they just bloom with aplomb. They are just covered in hundreds of roses. Mm-hmm. So it is great for harvesting if you want to do distillation because you get so many at one time. There's a few that are very popular, and actually Celsiana is one of the damask roses. And I believe you've ordered that rose this year, Teresa.
I'm excited about that rose.
Yeah, that's a beautiful damask rose. And then there is some repeat blooming damask roses. There's actually the autumn damask, which is actually not true. It comes from a different part of rose culture. But the autumn damask is a repeat blooming damask, and we have one rose called Rose de Resht, and it's a great little repeat blooming rose, and it dries perfectly. If you hang them upside down to dry, they just dry in perfect form, and so those are one of my favorites.
I've had the pleasure of Madame Hardy damask in my garden for 20 years, and it's one of the reasons I get so excited about spring, because as you say, that big prom of bloom in the spring is just wonderful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Madame Hardy's a beautiful white rose. Everybody, a lot of modern roses, they try to imitate that. They try to go for that full petals and that green eye. And David Austin actually was a bit successful with one of the roses he created called Fair Bianca, and it looks a lot like Madame Hardy. But we haven't been able to get any from them. I don't know. They seem to maybe they still have them, but we've tried to order them from them, and because they're supplying all the businesses these days with their roses, you must go through them. And so we've tried, but we can't get Fair Bianca. But yes, Madame Hardy still is the tried and true beautiful white rose.
It is beautiful. Excuse me. Next, let's talk about bourbon roses, the beautiful roses of Victorian England. We're not in Victorian England, but can we grow those here?
Oh yes, yeah. The so many, especially in I think where you are, a little bit higher, further north than Chris in Alabama. Those roses are very hardy, and so they're great for pretty much almost throughout the United States. Just some of the most of anywhere zone 5 and up, and they are just great. So many of them are repeat blooming and fragrant, and make great cutting roses also.
That's a nice combination, especially when you can get them to repeat. That's great. Let's move on to rugoses. I've heard it said that rugosa shrub roses are the perfect roses for the organic gardener. Would you agree with that?
Oh, definitely. Yes, the rugosa roses, they don't even like to be sprayed. So you don't need to spray them at all. They're usually just very disease resistant, black spot resistant, and shade tolerant. So they're just one of the top roses that we recommend for someone who has a difficult situation. I even remember traveling back east in Massachusetts and noticing the rugosa roses as used in the highways, alongside the highways. They're so hardy. They're also great for seaside conditions and along the beach because they stand up to the salty air.
They're great foundational plants, too. You just get so much bang for your buck with them because they're big and they're beautiful and they have that great display in the spring, but then they also have the beautiful hips in the fall. So you get a lot of bang for your buck with those, I think.
Yes, the hips are wonderful for the home gardener because they have so much meat on them. I'm sure there's another word for it, but they're just so plump and big, and so you can just open them up, take out the seeds, and pour your hot water over the flesh, and you have your own special dose of vitamin C. You get you through your cold or flu. And also another thing about that is one of the most ancient roses, we don't even have a date for it, is called Rosa rugosa alba. And I'm not sure, this is just my theory, but in the book, The Celestine Prophecy, they talk about a five-petal single rose that was a symbol for the lost femininity of Christianity. And it's in a lot of the keystones of different archways in Europe. And I have an inkling that could be the rose that it is being referred to in these keystones because it is so ancient.
That is so neat with the roses, just having that long history, standing the test of time. You know, we sometimes think of roses as prima donnas, but the old roses, they have stood the test of time, and that's just such a special part of the whole rose experience to me.
Yes, well, I'd love to share a quote with you because this is actually on our website, and you just reminded me of that. But Will Tillotson, who took over after Francis Lester passed away, he was a good friend of Francis Lester's and also in the orange shipping business with him. So he came up to help him Francis Lester ended up, he had leukemia, and so he did need some help at the end of his life. And Will Tillotson came up and brought Dorothy Stemler, who's my husband's grandmother, and then Dorothy Stemler's daughter, Pat Wiley, who ran this business from 1976 to 1996. She would drive Francis Lester to his leukemia appointments. But anyway, so that brings me to Will Tillotson, and he has this wonderful quote. He says, "What an interesting world it would be if the greatest were still with us, alive and representative of their era. Alas, they are gone forever, but the rose, in its infinite variety, still survives, identically as it grew and flowered even before the Christian era."
Wow.
So that is something neat. It's like we can't be with Josephine Bonaparte or Napoleon or Jesus, but we can be with these roses that were with these people, and it's really amazing.
That's interesting that you mentioned Josephine. I was wondering about that particular rose named for her, if it would grow in what climate is best for it.
Oh, yes, that's a quite hardy rose, so that would be hardy even to zone 4.
Oh, great. While we're talking about hardiness, could you recommend some roses that would be good for Chris to grow in the deep south?
Oh, yes. For the warm climates, some of the great roses are the noisettes, including Madame Alfred Carrière, which is a beautiful climbing white rose that repeat blooms throughout the season. It's a great rose because it will climb up to 20 feet, so it's excellent for going over a pergola or going over a side of a house, or how we use it here is it goes up onto a second-story deck. And so what's so nice is up on the deck, you just have all of these beautiful roses just blooming all along the railing. And then there's also any of the roses with the chinensis in it. So a rose we finally have again is called Mutabilis. And Mutabilis is so unique because the rose changes colors throughout the phase. And so it's phases. So it's opens up like an apricot, peach, and then it gets more pink on it, and then towards the end it's a very bright fuchsia. And so at one time you will have a bush and it will be covered, as someone described it, it's like seeing butterflies all over the bush because you have these, it's fairly single, and so you'll have the orange and pink. And one of the great things, it's really the China roses that brought the repeat blooming quality to roses, and they were mixed with many of the European roses. And so these roses just are usually covered in bloom throughout the year. And another rose that has chinensis in it is called the Rosa viridiflora, which is the green rose. And it's not really that so much beautiful rose, but a very unique rose. And it's in fact, when I was looking around our garden today in this freezing cold, it is one of the only roses blooming right now, the green rose. It just has bloomed throughout the whole season. So too bad it's not a little bit more beautiful for people, because people mainly just want to use it to collect, not so much, you know, for cutting or scent.
You're in good company. We love that.
Guinevere, we have a question. Just got a message via email that asked about the origins of the noisette rose. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, let's see. The noisettes, you know, that's a great question. And let me check out my handy book that I use of our history of roses. The noisettes, you know.
They're very popular here in the South, and we see a lot of the different types growing here.
Uh-huh. You know, I'm not so sure. I mean, the noisettes, they're grown in England. There's a blush noisette, Madame Alfred Carrière being a noisette. I know that it's one of the, you know, I've heard of this plant in England that's over 100 years old, and it's just one of the most prolific bloomers. I'm not so sure exactly about its history. It's come from Europe, but it does really well here.
Yeah, that's awesome. They're beautiful. I tell you, they're beautiful, I have a neighbor that has several of them planted in their garden, and they bloom when my hybrid teas aren't blooming, the Noisettes are blooming. So.
Very nice, very nice. Guinevere, I have an area where I have room for something bigger. It's going to go over a new pergola, and so I'd like to have a rambler. And with all this talk about Francis E. Lester, I know there's a rose named for him, and I love those attachment things. So what can you tell us about that rose and about ramblers in general?
Well, ramblers are really great because you can just plant them, and you really don't have to do much. You can just leave them and let them go. I mean, after, you know, at 10 years or so, you will need to go out and clean out some of that dead wood, and that can be a big job after a long time. But for the most part, they're just so easy because you just leave them and let them go, and they're so robust that they just require, you know, little pruning and minimal care. Yes, the Francis Lester is a great rambler and very shade tolerant. That's a sort of a hybrid musk rambler. There's also Newport Fairy is a longtime favorite rambler, and both of those have clusters of single blooms, and then they have beautiful rose hips that last throughout the winter. Right now they're just covered in these gorgeous rose hips, so they're great, you know, year-round. But we have another local rosarian here, and he's told me that ramblers are really his favorite because he just can plop them up anywhere, and I think he prunes them a bit more, but he'll guide them up obelisks, and so he just says he just loves them because, you know, you just can't stop them.
I like that. And where I'm going to plant this one, it is going to be shady there very soon, so that's perfect. So I guess it's going to be Francis E. Lester for me. Guinevere, my last questions deal with rose care. Do we prune the old roses the same way we do hybrid teas?
No, you really want it to have a lighter touch. The hybrid teas benefit from, you know, being pruned regularly right after they bloom to help encourage that new set of growth. But with the old roses, if you don't get around to pruning them, you're usually still going to have blooms off of that wood. So they tend to be a little more lax in a lot of their canes, certain ones, good money, and so they just require a very light pruning throughout the season. And then, you know, they're quite hardy. So they do, you know, sometimes they don't require really too much winterizing. But, you know, in certain climates, we're in California, so I'm not really an expert on that. But, and then if they're the old roses that are once annual bloomers, you just want to prune them right after they bloom. So that's usually at the end of June or July. And prune them a bit, you know, still a bit lightly, but leaving those lateral canes.
That's good. What about just the general care of keeping them healthy? Do they require fertilizer? What would be your top recommendations there?
Well, we recommend any kind of slow-release fertilizer or organic rose food. One of our favorite things to use is the alfalfa pellets that people use to feed rabbits that you can buy in the garden store. You can get a big bag for about $5, so it's really an affordable way to feed your roses in a healthy way that doesn't spur on too much growth at one time, which can kind of weaken the rose, which some of the more powerful chemical fertilizers can do. But so we recommend the alfalfa pellets and, you know, digging it in a little bit, covering it with mulch, and I was talking to another person about this, and she said, well, you have to watch out for the alfalfa pellets with sugar. I guess some don't have sugar and some do, and so be careful and not select the one with the sugar because I guess that can really attract the bunnies.
Well, that's good to know. That's good to know. Let's see. For those of you who like to know a little bit more about planting bare root roses, Guinevere has an excellent how-to video on her homepage of the website, which is rosesofyesterday.com. Chris, anything else you'd like to ask of Guinevere?
Well, we have another question from our chat room regarding climbing roses. What climbers would you recommend in cooler climates?
For cooler climates, there's some really hardy climbers that we, you know, are very popular in New York and upstate New York. there's the New Dawn Climbing and White Dawn. They're always been great hardy climbers, beautiful glossy green foliage, and they do have rose hips. The light fragrance, and they both get to about 14 feet. And then, actually, the Madame Alfred Carrière, surprisingly, has been quite good for even some of the colder climates. It's, recommended to about zone 6. So one thing we've heard from so many of our customers back east is that, you know, their zones are changing with this with the climate change, and so some of the places that might not have been able to have some of the less hardy roses are finding that they can have those now, which is sort of sad, but I guess we could look at that as a silver lining to climate change. Another great one is Climbing Dortmund and some of the Cordis roses. They hybridized really hardy roses, and there's Leverkusen, which is a beautiful yellow, and the Dortmund is a bright red, and the Newport Fairy and Francis Lester are both hardy to zone 4. They might be more to zone 6, but and then there's some other of the more modern roses like Aloha. That's one of my favorite modern climbers. It's a descendant of New Dawn, so it has a really beautiful glossy green foliage, but its blooms are bigger than New Dawn and a richer pink, and they're just so fragrant. That is just one of my favorite climbers right now.
Oh, wow. I think New Dawn is the parent for a lot of the subsequent climbers that came after that. It's such a vigorous rose.
Yes.
I heard that someone said, I think P. Allen Smith said that you can't sling a cat in Little Rock without hitting a New Dawn climber. So
oh,
I think
really?
They're pretty popular. I love that. Someone else asked via email this morning, we got several email questions about the Climbing Altissimo. Do you grow that rose in your garden?
Oh, yes, the Climbing Altissimo?
Yes.
Yeah, Altissimo. Yes, that is a great bloomer. That is just a beautiful, nice, clear red, repeat blooming. I gave one to my stepmom, and boy, I've not heard the end of it, of how wonderful that rose is. So it's a great pillar rose, and it's hardy, quite hardy also. And actually, I'm checking our bare root list, and I see we don't have that on there. That is one of the roses that used to be really commonly available, and it's one of, unfortunately, many of the big commercial growers have, every year they drop, some of the varieties, and that is something that was recently dropped. So it's not available bare root, but it is something, with so many of those that have gotten dropped, including Sally Holmes and Sombrui and, Buff Beauty. I mean, these were all very popular roses and grown by the big growers, but this last 10 years they've cut all of those out, and so we've started growing them all with our on their own roots. So we have those available now as own root potted roses, and we can the 1 gallon are more affordable to ship. I mean, they do add extra weight, so it can be a little challenging, for shipping costs, but with the 1 gallon size, it's, when we send it, we can send up to 6 at a time, and so then it's a little more affordable, but thank goodness for FedEx Ground, because they help make it a little more affordable to ship really heavy items, so we've using them, and so, yes, we do have Altissimo as own root rose.
Well, that's great. Can I get you just to share for a minute about how vigorous an own root rose is versus a grafted rose?
Yes, well, the own root roses, since the grafted roses are grafted onto a rootstock, and that rootstock has usually already been grown for 2 years, and then they graft it, the new variety onto it, and that grows for another 2 years. So that's almost 4 years. And then when they dig them up at this time of year, December, they're great because they they've come from the field, and then you put them in the ground, and they just are ready to just go because, you know, they've their roots have gotten as big as they want, and so, you know, they're especially vigorous, and usually with a bare root rose when you plant it, you'll have, you know, a couple feet of growth and blooms in 65 days from the time you plant it, which can really shock people. I've had some people come out and shown them, well, here's a potted rose we just planted. It's a bare root rose, and they think, what? That doesn't look like anything. But as you guys well know, 2 months later, it's amazing the transformation that takes place. As far as the own root roses, now, some are very vigorous, you know, depending on the variety, and then others are a little bit slower to get going. So, like some of the old cutting roses that are so great, like Madame Isaac Perrier or Lorraine, the 1 gallon size is quite a good size. Some people are familiar, if they've been purchasing own root roses, with the bands, and they're about a 3x3x6 little teeny pot. So you're not getting too much of a plant, but with our grower, we're having him just go ahead and grow them to the 1 gallon size. And so they're quite a substantial plant. They usually have 3 canes and at least and a good decent pencil size cane. We had a customer, and he's in Michigan, and he only wanted all the own root potted roses. So we shipped those all to him, and he planted them in late May. And the reports have been great. He's, you know, they did well during the summer, and they survived the winter. So sometimes they might not get as tall as fast. They might take that extra year of growth. But what people like about them is you don't ever have the rootstock growing, which can happen over winter if there's some dieback. What will come back the next spring is more too much rootstock. And sometimes that will just be along with the rose. So it's easy enough to see how, you know, it's very distinct. So, and you can tell which cane is not the right rose. So you're supposed to go and twist that off of the root. You never want to prune the rootstock because that just makes it stronger and come back more. So that's why people really like the own root, is they don't have any rootstock issues. And also when there is some free back or dieback, that rose will come back as the same rose. So a lot of people have really gone to preferring the own root roses.
Well, thanks. That's a lot of good information, and so true. About the humble beginnings of a bare root rose that comes, what a difference another month or two makes. It looks so, it's like the ugly duckling becomes the swan of the garden.
Mm-hmm.
This has been great. Thanks so much for joining us today. And we
thank you. Thank you so much for having me. It's been great to meet you guys on the Twitter and now on the radio show, and I'm just so excited for this radio show about roses. I can't imagine anything better than this.
Oh, thanks. Thanks. Come again.
Thank you so much.
Well, don't go anywhere now. We'll be right back after a few words from our sponsors and from the American Rose Society. We'll be back with Mr. Jacques Farrar of Star Roses and Plants.
Hi, I'm Phil Paul with the American Rose Society. My family has been growing roses for some 50 years. My wife and I have grown roses across the United States for the last 25. There's nothing more breathtaking than a beautiful display of roses in full bloom.
No matter if you're an experienced rosarian or are just beginning your first rose garden, the American Rose Society is here to help. It's a tremendous resource for making your rose garden the envy of your neighborhood. There's even a rose photography contest for members to showcase the best of the best. Each member will be published in the American Rose Magazine.
We invite you to become a part of one of America's oldest horticultural societies and the home of our national floral emblem.
For more information on becoming a member of the American Rose Society and on the rose photography contest, visit ars.org.
Hi, this is Jackie DeLia with Southern Post Journal, and today I want to talk to you about manure compost tea. This is Authentic Haven brand from California. One of the things that I really like about this is how easy it is to apply. It's a simple cotton bag filled with composted manure. You drop it in your bucket, typically a 1 to 5 gallon bucket of water. drop in your tea bag, you'll notice some of the brown liquids coming out, and that's the manure starting to mix with the water. Once that's finished, 1 to 3 days, you'll have some fantastic manure tea ready for putting on your plants. So I've got my manure tea brewing for about 3 days, and I'm going to take a peek in there and see what it looks like. It's got a great color, it's got a great smell, and it's ready to be applied to my garden. So whether you choose to put it in your watering can and a sprayer, or just take a bucket and drench it into your vegetable garden, it's very easy to use. I use it in my garden, and I highly recommend it. So give it a try.
Be sure to check out the Haven Brand Soil Conditioners online at manuretea.com. Now, our next guest is Mr. Jacques Farrar. He is with Star Roses and Plants, and he's here to talk about the Plant Watch program. And, you know, so many times we often hear about counterfeit goods for sale, items such as handbags, clothes, jewelry, but roses, yeah, it's become a problem. Joining us now is Mr. Farrar, and he's here to talk about this issue and about a program called the Plant Watch program. Good morning. Welcome to Rose Chat.
Good morning, and thank you for having me in the program.
Thank you. I wanted to start by asking you, how prevalent is this issue of what I call counterfeit roses? I'm not sure if that's the correct term.
Yeah, it is actually. You know, lots of the newly introduced roses, and not just roses, by the way, but a lot of the new and most exciting plants that you can find at a garden center retailer are actually protected by patent law. And the problem is prevalent, is probably less today than it was about 10 years ago because of the lot of the information that we've been able to spread to the industry. And so it is still a problem, but it's a little less of a problem. However, I mean, because there are still people out there that either knowingly or unknowingly doing things that they're not supposed to do, well, they propagate plants. We have been a member of this Plant Watch organization for the last 2.5 years.
Oh, wow. Could you tell us about the rules for propagating plants? I know that there are patents and licenses, and I've been told that at some point those expire. And so could you kind of fill our listeners in on the rules?
First you would start, you know, when you buy a plant at a garden center or a big box or, you know, on the mail order. I mean, reputable sources of plants, if the plant is patented, will come at minimum with a label that states the name of the plant, the variety name under which it's patented, which is usually not a very nice name. It's a name for the breeder, and it's not usually the commercial name, and also the patent number. And that should give the gardener the indication that that plant is patented. And basically, when somebody buys a plant that is patented, it should not be propagating it. That may come as a shock for a lot of your listeners, but I checked again with our patent attorney before getting on the program, and the law is very clear that technically you are not supposed to propagate even for your own use. That being said, you know, it's not to say that anybody is going to come and double-check in your garden if you propagate a plant. That's not the case. What we're looking at is people that are really, you know, trying to do damage to the inventor and to the nurseries that play the game and pay the royalties that are usually attached to the plant patent.
Oh, yeah, that's very interesting. So the Plant Watch program as a whole, and I'll get you to speak a little bit about that, is a program for monitoring growers. Is that
yes,
right?
Yes, absolutely. The program is it's been founded by four nurseries and plant introducers, Star Roses and Plants being one of them, Bailey Nursery, very prominent introducer for the endless summer hydrangeas, Flowerwood Plant Development Services, who are responsible for the development of the anchor azaleas, and Spring Meadow Nurseries, that is a part of the proven winter color choice for shrubs. We have been getting together about two and a half years ago, just as a monitoring service to make sure that the word is out in the grower community that you know, the plant that we are introducing are, you know, in fact patented, and that you know, all the grower community should know that what they can do and cannot do with those plants.
Wow. So how do consumers know that they're making the right decision at a store or a roadside stand, or is there any way to tell from a consumer perspective?
Yes, there is. There's two levels, really. There is the plant that is it starts with really with a label that should state clearly that the name of the plant, again, the patent number, and that the fact that that plant is patented and is asexual propagation is prohibited. And that covers probably literally tens of thousands of plants right now. There has been about 22,000 plus plant patent issued since 1930, since the Patent Act was enacted by Congress. And you know, it starts with the label. Now, in some cases, like with our Knockout and Drift Roses, or with Endless Summer, or Anchor Azaleas, or Proven Winter Color Choice, we went above and beyond the tag, and by developing a complete branding merchandising based on a specific color pot, and the consumer should look for those pots as well as the tags. That will guarantee that they are buying a plant that has been propagated and grown by a legitimate grower.
Oh, wow. Yeah, and I see those bright green Knockout and Drift Rose pots in our local home center, so that's a good indicator, a good visual. You can just look through the selection and you see those branded pots, you'll know that it's the real thing.
Absolutely, and there would be white for Proven Winners, and there would be maroon for Anchor Azaleas, and blue for Endless Summer Hydrangeas.
Wow. Well, this has just been a very interesting discussion today, and I just want to thank you for taking a few minutes out of your busy day. I know you're busy propagating and creating roses and managing that the rose fields, and I just thank you for coming in and sharing this information with our consumers today and all of our listeners.
Well, you're very, very welcome, and you know, again, thank you for having us, you know, in the show. We are a big supporter and big fan of what you guys are doing.
Well, thank you so much. Thank you. Now, I placed a link to an interesting blog post about this topic on the Rose Chat Radio page at rosechatradio.com, and just click on blog, and you'll see that link there. Again, thank you so much for joining us.
And one last thing, you know, if you go to the blog, you'll see I got some entries on the blog that are on the more mundane topics than the plant patent, and probably more interesting for most of the listeners as well. So.
Oh, yeah. I love the Canard Pile blog. It is a super resource for roses and rose information and history. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Take care. Have a great weekend.
All right. You also. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye.
This is Susan of GagasGarden.com. Did you all know that you can follow each one of us on Twitter? Teresa is a garden diary, and Chris is Redneck Rosaria, and Amy Hayden is at Green Soil. So be sure to follow us on Twitter, and we're happy to answer any of your questions. Also, I'm not sure if any of you know it, but all of our podcasts are available, and you can listen to any past broadcasts at Rose Chat Radio. Thank you for joining us today for Rose Chat on Blog Talk Radio, and we'd love to hear your comments and feedback on today's show. You can find, again, all of us on Twitter by following the hashtag RoseChat. And be sure to like us on Facebook or contact us via email at grow@rosechat.info. Be sure to check out our website, and we see many of you are going there at rosechatradio.com for details on upcoming shows. And again, that's where you can find the archive of all the previous broadcasts and special offers from our sponsors. If you're interested in becoming a sponsor of the show, just email us again at grow@rosechat.info and we'll send you our latest media kit. Thank you for listening and we'll see you next week.
As always, thanks to Annie Haven of Haven Brand Soil Conditioners for sponsoring Rose Chat. Visit Annie on the web at manuratea.com or contact her via GreenSoil. Susan, do you have our guest for next week?
I sure do. Next week, Sydney Wade from Rose Petal Nursery will be with us, and she's going to talk about some of the rare rose varieties and offer some planting and care tips for heirloom and old garden roses. And we also have Janet Ensley about the upcoming Northwest Flower and Garden Show. Aren't you talking at that, Chris? Or do we have, that's when Paul Zimmerman's going to be there, isn't he? And you don't want to miss that. And he's really one of our exciting guests that people are always tuning in to listen to. So you don't want to miss that broadcast. And as always, we want to thank Annie Haven at Haven Brand Soil Conditioners for sponsoring Rose Chat. Thank you so much, Annie. Please visit her beautiful website at www.manuretea.com. And you can contact her. She's always there with a quick answer at GreenSoil. Until next time, happy gardening from your friends at Rose Chat.